It was, as it were, the soul of a powerful child. He saw the universe in terms of the family herd. His fear of, his abjection before, the old man mingled with his fear of the dangerous animals about him. But the women, goddesses, were kindlier and more subtle. They helped, they protected, they gratified and consoled. Yet at the same time there was something about them less comprehensible than the direct brutality of the old man, a greater mystery, so that the woman also had her vestiture of fear for him. Third, another idea probably arose early out of the mysterious visitation of infectious diseases, and that was the idea of uncleanness and of being accursed. From that, too, there may have come an idea of avoiding particular places and persons in particular phases of health. Here was the root of another set of taboos. Then man, from the very dawn of his mental life, may have had a feeling of the sinister about places and things. Animals who dread traps have that feeling. A tiger will abandon its usual jungle route at the sight of a few threads of cotton. Like most young animals, young human beings are easily made fearful of this or that by their nurses and seniors. Here's another set of ideas, ideas of repulsion and avoidance that sprang up almost inevitably in men. As soon as speech began to develop, it must have got to work upon such fundamental feelings and begun to systematize them and keep them in mind. By talking together, men would reinforce each other's fears and establish a common tradition of taboos, of things forbidden and of things unclean. With the idea of uncleanness would come ideas of cleansing and of removing a curse. The cleansing would be conducted through the advice and with the aid of wise old men or wise old women, and in such cleansing would lie the germ of the earliest priestcraft and witchcraft. Speech, from the first, would be a powerful supplement to the merely imitative education, and to the education of cuffs and blows conducted by a speechless parent. Mothers would tell their young and scold their young. As speech developed, men would find they had experiences and persuasions that gave them, or seemed to give them, power. They would make secrets of these things. There's a double streak in the human mind, a streak of cunning secretiveness, and a streak perhaps of later origin that makes us all anxious to tell and astonish and impress each other. Many people make secrets in order to have secrets to tell. These secrets of early men they would convey to younger, more impressionable people more or less honestly and impressively in some process of initiation. Moreover, the pedagogic spirit overflows in the human mind. Most people like telling other people not to. Extensive arbitrary prohibitions for the boys, for the girls, for the women also probably came very early into human history. Then the idea of the sinister has for its correlative the idea of the propitious, and from that to the idea of making things propitious by ceremonies, is an easy step. Fourth, out of such ideas and a jumble of kindred ones grew the first quasi-religious elements in human life. With every development of speech it became possible to intensify and develop the tradition of taboos and restraints and ceremonies. There's not a savage or barbaric race today that isn't held in a net of such tradition. And with the coming of the primitive herdsman, there would be a considerable broadening out of all this sort of practice. Things hitherto unheeded would be found of importance in human affairs. Neolithic man was nomadic in a different spirit from the mere daylight drift after food of the primordial hunter. He was a herdsman upon whose mind a sense of direction and the lie of the land had been forced. He watched his flock by night as well as by day. The sun by day, and presently the stars by night, helped to guide his migrations. He began to find, after many ages, that the stars are steadier guides than the sun. He would begin to note particular stars and star groups, and to distinguish any individual thing was, for primitive man, to believe it individualized and personal. He'd begin to think of the chief stars as persons, very shining and dignified and trustworthy persons, looking at him like bright eyes in the night. his primitive tillage, strengthened his sense of the seasons. Particular stars ruled his heavens when seed time was due. Up to a certain point, a mountain peak or what not, a bright star moved. Night after night, it stopped there, and then night after night, receded. Surely this was a sign, a silent, marvellous warning to the wise. The beginnings of agriculture, we must remember, were in the subtropical zone, or even nearer the equator, where stars of the first magnitude shine with a splendour unknown in more temperate latitudes. And Neolithic man was counting and falling under the spell of numbers. There are savage languages that have no word for any number above 5. Some people can't go above 2, but Neolithic man, in the lands of his origin in Asia and Africa, even more than in Europe, was already counting his accumulating possessions. He was beginning to use tallies, and wondering at the triangularity of 3, and the squareness of 4, and why some quantities like 12 were easy to divide in all sorts of ways, and others, like 13, impossible. 12 became a noble, generous, and familiar number to him, and 13 rather an outcast and disreputable one. And probably man began reckoning time by the clock of the full and new moons. Moonlight is an important thing to herdsmen who no longer merely hunt their herds but watch and guard them. Moonlight, too, was perhaps his time for love-making, as indeed it may have been for primordial man and the ground ape ancestor before him. But from the phases of the moon, as his tillage increased, man's attitude would go on to the greater cycle of the seasons. Primordial man probably only drifted before the winter as the days grew cold. Neolithic man knew surely that the winter would come, and stored his fodder and presently his grain. He had to fix a seed time, a propitious seed time, or his sowing was a failure. The earliest recorded reckoning is by moons and by generations of men. The former seems to be the case in the book of Genesis, where, if one reads the great ages of the patriarchs who lived before the flood, as lunar months instead of years, Methuselah and the others are reduced to a credible length of life. But with agriculture began the difficult task of squaring the lunar month with the solar year, a task which has left its scars on our calendar today. Easter shifts uneasily from year to year, to the great discomfort of holidaymakers. It's now inconveniently early and now late in the season because of this ancient reference of time to the moon. And when men began to move with set intention from place to place with their animal and other possessions, then they would begin to develop the idea of other places in which they were not, and to think of what might be in those other places. And in any valley where they lingered for a time, they would, remembering how they got there, ask, "How did this or that other thing get here?" They would begin to wonder what was beyond the mountains, and where the sun went when it set, and what was above the clouds. 5. The capacity for telling things increased with their vocabulary. The simple individual fancies, the unsystematic fetish tricks and fundamental taboos of Paleolithic man began to be handed on and made into a more consistent system. Men began to tell stories about themselves, about the tribe, about its taboos, and why they had to be, about the world, and the why for the world. A tribal mind came into existence, a tradition. Paleolithic man was certainly more of a free individualist, more of an artist, as well as more of a savage than Neolithic man. Neolithic man was coming under prescription. He could be trained from his youth and told to do things and not to do things. He wasn't so free to form independent ideas of his own about things. He had thoughts given to him. He was under a new power of suggestion. And to have more words and to attend more to words is not simply to increase mental power. Words themselves are powerful things and dangerous things. Paleolithic man's words, perhaps, were chiefly just names. He used them for what they were.